Board of Directors.
Let me start over.
Well, I will be conducting the meeting of the Retirement Committee here at the Orange County Water District headquarters in Fountain Valley at 12 p.m. Roll call, please.
Roll call, Director Mezquen.
Present.
Director Wiegand.
Here.
Director Bilodeau. Director Yeo. Director Whitaker.
Here.
Director Meeks. Director Nguyen. Director Tran. Director Sheldon. Director Green. Jason Dadakis.
Here.
Kevin O'Toole.
Here.
You do have a committee.
All right, great. Visitor participation. Members of the audience wishing to address the committee slash board on items of interest to the public are requested to identify themselves. If the matter on which they wish to comment is an agenda item, the visitor will be called on when that matter comes up for consideration. Are there any members of the public? All right. Items received too late to be agendized. Do you need me to read that or?
No.
I'm kind of new at this, so you're catching the brand new pairs here.
There are none.
All right. Consent calendar items 1 and 2, minutes of the Retirement Committee meeting held on December 5th, and the Retirement Committee employee vacancy appointments. Do I have a motion for any of the consent calendar items?
So moved.
I'll second.
All right. I'll call the roll.
Roll call, Director Mezquen.
Yes.
Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Jason Dadakis.
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole.
Yes.
That motion carries 0.
Now we'll move on to item number 3, which is Money Purchase Plan Investment Lineup and 457 Plan Red Flag Fund Review.
I'm just going to turn over to Scott.
All right.
Thanks, everybody, for the time. Appreciate it. So if you don't know me, I'm Scott Sutherland, so the retirement plan consultant. We are a bit off schedule because our conversion from Empower to Fidelity last year. So we had our December 5th meeting, which was our October meeting. We're having our January meeting here in February. We'll be back on schedule after this with our quarterly review. So twice a year, we do a full review of the 401(a) plan. Twice a year, we do a full review of the 457 plan, and then in those alternate meetings, we're looking at red flagged or items for attention on the other plan just in case to consider that. So today is a 401(a) money purchase full review, and we have a red or gray flag to look at on the 457 plan. So I'm looking at the minutes that were just approved on our agenda from the last meeting. We did have on the 457 plan to look at the red flags on the J.P. Morgan Emerging Markets Equity and the Touchstone Midcap. So we'll talk about that in just a second. The 401(a), we had the J.P. Morgan Midcap Growth, which was red flagged in April of last year, and the Goldman Sachs Inflation Protected Bond, which was red flagged the prior August. So we started, as we're doing today, reviewing the meeting minutes, and then on the next page went to a market and economic review. And let me share this with everybody here. There. And then we did end up making one fund change, which is in the 457. So we added the American Funds New World. So that's a new investment in the same category of emerging markets. And in the next section down under decisions, you'll see that that was replacing the J.P. Morgan Emerging Market Equity. So we took out J.P. Morgan, moved the money and future elections for all participants into the American Funds New World. And then we looked at Touchstone Midcap, which was on red flag in the 457. And that's actually improved its performance enough. We took it completely off the red flag list. So back over to the money purchase plan, the J.P. Morgan Midcap Growth, we maintained the red flag. We have to look at that one today and make a decision. And then we actually ended up with one less fund in the plan. The Goldman Sachs Inflation Protected had been a bit of a struggling performer. It didn't have a lot of interest from employees. So we ended up merging that into a stronger fund and a more popular fund, which is the American Funds Bond Fund of America. So one less choice in terms of confusing employees about making those selections, but we have a better fund there for them. Under discussion items, all other funds met or exceeded their benchmarks. Plan balance, the 457 plan as of late November last year, just over $35 million. Average account balance for 281 participants is $125,000. The 401(a) is $166 million. Average account balance is about $470,000. The The 401A plan does allow loans. So there's about $1 million in loans outstanding held by 60 participants. Average loan balance is about 18,000. And then we do a separate report than the main report, which is going through the target date funds, which we'll do again today. Questions for me, please?
Yeah, thanks. Since I'm new, I just wanted to get a couple of things. Sure. On the red flag, so there's a process. So yeah. If something gets red flagged by this group saying, we don't want to offer that fund anymore, you kind of give it a period of time to evaluate.
Yeah, so we have an investment policy statement that the committee signed and that we've signed. So that's kind of our business plan for how we make these decisions. So if we have a fund that we're seeing that's underperforming its benchmarks, what we'll do is put on a red flag, which says it has 2 to 4 quarters to show signs of improvement. We can make a quicker move if we need to and just replace it if it looks like it's struggling or the fund manager's changed or something's changed with the fund company. But typically you put it on red flag, which is essentially a watch list to say it's got to get better. And then we look at it every quarter to see if it is getting better. If it is getting better, then often we can take it off red flag. So we don't want to make changes unless we have to. But if it's not performing better, then we actually will replace it with another fund in the same category. Occasionally, as we did in the last meeting, we might merge funds together if it made more sense from on an enterprise level, just to have one less choice. So.
Got it. And then each one of these that are on red flag are just all of them. Those are options for an employee to choose, or can you choose a combination of them? Percentage out here, you know, say you wanted to have 10 of them and
you definitely can. So each plan has its own list of investments. So the 457 voluntary deferred compensation and the money purchase plan. There's 2 or 3 funds that cross over in both plans, like the Vanguard 500 index. But you can choose one if you wanted to, but we recommend typically having 5 or 6, unless you picked a target date or a risk-based fund, which is kind of a complete portfolio in itself. So we'll look at those a little bit today. So like American Funds Target Date 2030 represents an entire portfolio for someone who might retire in 6 years. And then if you wanted to build your own portfolio, typically 5, 6, 7 funds would be a good way to do that. So you can do either or, and we even see some people do a target date and then build maybe their portfolio with another part of their account.
Got it. And then the last question is just the loan balance. What could you take a loan out for? Anything? Or there a certain
They are general purpose loans. We still don't designate real estate loans anymore.
There are. For your primary residence, you can get a loan.
Like your very first home, like a 401k does, or this is any type of home?
Primary residence.
Just as long as it's that.
Yeah.
You can use that for like home improvements or anything like that, like a home equity line type loan?
So the general purpose loan would be 5 years or less, and you don't have to designate the purpose for it. If you're doing the primary residence, then you can do longer than 5 years.
Yeah, to 15.
Got it. Okay, cool. Yep. Thanks.
So if you borrow money, you're paying interest on that, but you're paying interest back to yourself, but your money's no longer invested, so it's not earning that portion of it.
And there's no penalty or anything for anyone to do that?
But you do need to pay it back. If you terminated service and had unpaid balance, you'd have a period of time you needed to pay that back. If you weren't able to make the payments, then it could be default, and I can't remember if ever.
No, thanks.
Yeah, but have we ever had a default, anybody?
No, not us, not while they're active. Because they come out through payroll deductions.
Occasionally, might have someone who left who didn't make the payments, and it's defaulted. It's a taxable event for them. It's not a credit event for them.
And maybe you can expand. There you go.
Thank you. Any other questions on what we covered so far? Took a little bit of market overview here. How the markets did in 2023. So this is through the fourth quarter. So QTD is quarter to date, so that represents a fourth quarter of last year, then the entire year to date, 1 year going to be the same, a 3-year average, a 5-year average, and a 10-year average there. So you get an idea. And then we're looking at the major indexes for equities first, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the NASDAQ, and the S&P 500. And then we break it down into further indexes. The Russell 1000 represents large stocks, so this is large U.S. stocks. That can also be split up in the 1,000 largest growth stocks, 1,000 largest value stocks. There's only 3,750 publicly traded securities these days. When I started, there was closer to 8,000. So not as many publicly traded companies, so it's harder to fill out the Russell 1000. Mid-sized companies, mid-cap index is 2 to 7 billion in terms of that company's overall market value. And the Russell 2000 represents the next biggest companies after the Russell 1000. So if you've ever heard of the Russell 3000, it pretty much composes most publicly traded securities these days. But Russell 2000 is a proxy for small cap stocks. So if we're looking at things that are 2 billion and under, they're typically going to be in the Russell 2000, and that can be split out to growth and value. Russell 3000, I mentioned, is there. And the last two benchmarks are overseas. So the EAFE is Europe, Africa, and the Far East. And then emerging markets are going to be places like China, India, Brazil, Mexico, et cetera. So if we look at performance for 2023, markets did very well, gaining back a lot of what they lost in 2022. So if we look at the Dow's up 16%. The NASDAQ, which had the biggest loss in 22, had the biggest recovery in 23 at 44%. The S&P, which was down 18% in 22, is up 26% in 23. And if you look at the markets, the overall global markets for all stocks that are publicly traded across the world, we're almost exactly where we were at the peak of the market in the year, the beginning of the year 2022. So if you go a little further down the list, you'll notice that growth is back to outperforming value. So last year was a year where everybody fell in love again with technology stocks that they had thrown out in 2022. So a lot of money was chased into those growth benchmarks. And if you looked at the S&P last year, you can see overall it was up about 26%. But if you took out the seven biggest companies in the benchmark, which represent almost 30% of the benchmark, so seven companies represent almost a third of the 500's value, the market was only up 7% last year. So companies like Microsoft and NVIDIA driving the biggest returns last year, Meta, the old Facebook, seeing some big gains, which were some big losses in 2022. NVIDIA, if you believe it, if anybody's followed this story of late, it was actually down 70% in 2022, and now it's up 300% since that level. It gained more last Wednesday than the value of Coca-Cola. So it has been moving quickly higher as people are excited about artificial intelligence GPUs. So now we're looking at bonds under the fixed income market. So the U.S. aggregate bond index was up 6% in the quarter and 5% for the year. So the first three quarters of last year, it was down. And then interest rates really started to fall as we showed signs that inflation was tapping down and the Fed was likely to start lowering interest rates this year. So you saw a rally in bonds. The bonds had a slight loss in 2021, a historical loss in 2022. So it came very close to a three-year consecutive calendar year of losses, which had never happened before, but a fourth quarter rally set that straight. So really that rally took off right around Halloween, which tied out really well with our conversion from Empower to Fidelity, because a lot of people had moved out of the Prudential Guaranteed Income Fund in through bonds to try to get a better interest rate, and they got a lot of price depreciation out of that too. So if you go down the different benchmarks, Treasury bills is a short-term one. That's going to have the biggest impact from what the Federal Reserve does with short-term interest rates. So that was about a 5% yield, still about a 5% yield. If you go a little further down, you see municipal bonds had a good year and good quarter, up about 6%, 7% for the overall quarter. And then if you go overseas markets, bonds did okay. The global benchmark didn't do as well as the emerging markets benchmark. The third to last section is the commodity index. Commodities have really been down for the last year and a half. So if you look at gold, if you look at energy, if you look at natural gas, those prices have been falling drastically. So you can see that over the last year, the commodity index is down. Any questions on that at all? Show you the different portions of the S&P 500, if you can see this on the right here. S&P 500 has 11 sectors that make up the market. This is the entire year of 2023. So the fourth quarter is in orange. The entire year is in purple. And you can see where most of the money was being made. It was information technology, consumer discretionary, and communication services. So communication services is where Meta and Alphabet would fall, or Google, as some people think of it as. Consumer discretionary is where Tesla and Amazon would fall. And then information technologies were NVIDIA, Apple, which has kind of been a quiet stock for a couple of years, and Microsoft, which has been a monster of late as well. It's interesting because what was the loser in 2023 was energy. Anybody guess where energy fell in 2022? It was number one. So we go from worst to first and first to worst. So the information technology and consumer discretionary that got clobbered in 22 is number one again. So we all, human nature is to extrapolate all those moves and assume they'll go on forever, but the cycle is typically how things work. It's just a question of knowing when that cycle will turn. I'd love to know that. All right, questions for me about the markets at all? So let's look at the fee disclosure here. This is how Fidelity demonstrates the expenses in the plan. And for those of you who are newer, we did make a change when we moved to Fidelity. It's any of the funds that have any revenue sharing, which I'll explain what that is in a second. That money is now going back to the participant that owns that. It's no longer going to cover plan expenses. And then there's a separate transparent fee, which is how Fidelity gets paid and how our team gets paid, which will be visible for participants to see both online and on their statements. Now, many of these funds here do not have any revenue sharing. If there is a number in the column on the right in green, that is revenue sharing. If there's nothing there, there is no revenue sharing. Now, the world of revenue sharing is a bit odd and hard to understand, and it'll make sense at some point. But most of these investments you can buy on your own. You can set up an account with Janus, set up an account with Vanguard. But when they're in a retirement plan like this, those mutual fund companies don't need to do as much work. They don't have to issue 1099 statements. They have to take your phone calls. So they share a portion of that expense of the fund with 401k record keepers, 457 record keepers, 401a record keepers to pay for the expense of holding that fund. And that's what's known as revenue sharing. Now, as margins have been compressed drastically over the last 20 years in this industry, we're seeing fewer and fewer funds that do pay revenue sharing. So a lot of ours are zero revenue sharing funds, but what's super complicated, and you'll see some examples in a second, is that if you look at some of the funds net of the revenue sharing, if you look at what they charge minus what they refund to you, it's actually cheaper than the version that is the zero revenue sharing version. So the committee decided under much discussion last year to decide to use the share class that is the most fee efficient. In other words, with the refund, the participant is net owning the cheapest version of the share that exists in the marketplace. The problem with that is you have some back and forth. They see a little bit higher fee on their sheet. They see a few more transactions on their statements, but they are getting the best deal financially. I will pause for questions about that. So the funds are listed here in order of size. The Prudential Guaranteed is still the largest at 42 million in there.
Our portfolio.
This is the actual numbers in our plans right here. So these are your numbers here. So participants are at the top, dollars are listed here. And then the expense ratio of each one of the funds is to the right of that. And if you multiply the dollars times the expense ratio, you get an idea how much the fund manager is making on each fund. So if I go to page two, and sorry, this is a little small here. But if you look at the investment options, so the dollar weighted average is now 33.7 basis point. A basis point is 1/100th of a percent. So you get an idea what that is. And then the minus over here would be our fee. This hasn't been paid to us yet, but that would be our fee over the course of the year. Fidelity's fee is 2.75 basis points, which will also be transparent on participant statements. If you add them both together, this is the number over here, which is the 7 basis points.
Just for my historical background, before we were at Fidelity, we were where?
We were at Prudential, which was bought out by Empower. So we were still on Prudential's platform the whole time, but for the last, year and a half, Empower owned the Prudential platform.
And Fidelity just had a better
option. Yeah, so we did a full RFP. We had, 8 responses to that. We had 3 finalists that came out and presented the first couple of days of November of 22. Voya, Empower, and Fidelity were the finalists. And I think Fidelity is probably the pretty clear winner on that. We had some battles with leaving Empower, so it delayed a little bit the timeline, but we officially left on October 31st of last year.
Was there a fee to get out, or was it just...
There was a penalty for pulling money out of the guaranteed fund. And it took Stephanie and I hundreds of hours fight that through. So we got it done. But because interest rates have gone higher, all fixed accounts, the value of the bonds were below book value. So to liquidate that would create a loss, which either the district have to cover or Power would have to cover. So we had to negotiate a way of doing that without any losses. So there's a restriction on how we get that money out. They're going to make payments for the total amount of us over two different payments. Half of it will be paid on November 1st of this year, the other half on November 1st of next year. But participants can pull money out of that at any point, and many have. We've already seen about $18 million leave that account this year. Yep.
Scott, could you mention the additional value for Fidelity products column?
Yeah, so we used to argue with Fidelity. If it's a Fidelity fund, you're making money twice, so you need to represent that. So they've kind of just put away a number that they say that we're crediting that in terms of going towards our total fee. So if we need to make 2.75 basis points and it's a Fidelity fund, we're assuming that we're making money on the other side of the house too. So they'll just credit a little bit more back.
Okay, so that's included in what will be credited back?
Yes, sir.
Yep. Okay.
So if you put the first green column, sorry, this is small for my glasses here. The first green column, the second green column, you're added up to the third green column. So.
And that represents the money that goes back to participants who hold that.
Yep. Fund. Yep. So if they have a Fidelity fund, they're getting a little extra money back, more than the normal revenue sharing. Let's say if it was a Fidelity fund held in Empower, they would not be getting that. So a confusing subject, obviously we are doing a webinar tomorrow, please join us, where we're going to cover this with participants to walk them through this. This is not a new fee, it is a transparent fee. So in the past, that revenue sharing was captured by Empower and used to cover their fees, to cover our fee. Now that's given back to the employee, and then the employees are all being charged the same percentage, regardless of which investments they use. But if they have a fund that has revenue sharing, they're getting that money paid back to them. Questions for me? So there will be in future reports a little bit under transaction fees if there was any loans or qualified domestic relations orders or those kind of things where a participant was asking Fidelity to do something for them personally. So that would be reported there, but we're just very, very early into the game here. So that's not showing up yet. What those fees are in the gray area there. So an in-service withdrawal, a loan withdrawal, an overnight of the check, that kind of thing. Those are all participant-initiated transactions. If they chose to do that, Fidelity would make them aware of the fees. Questions on any of this? How are you guys liking Fidelity so far?
So far, so good.
All right. That's what we like to hear. Okay, so now we're going to look at a sheet that is showing how the money and the money purchase plan is distributed. These are not return numbers, but where the assets are allocated. So we saw a total in the prior meeting of about $166 million. These percentages represent what percentage of that total are held in each particular fund. So we've created these Morningstar style boxes. Morningstar's kind of created this lay of the land the last 25 years to look and analyze mutual funds. So domestic equities are at the top. Value is on the left. Those top three boxes are all value funds. And then you go top to bottom, large, mid, and small. In the middle, it's blend. Typically, your index funds are going to fall in blend, large, mid, and small. And on the right is going to be growth, large, mid, and small. And you get an idea of what you have in each category. So each box lists the name of the funds. There might be one in the category. There might be three. The percentage in each fund is represented. And the total in that category is represented at the top of the box above the name of the category. So those are all domestic equities. So let's say a popular area is large cap blend. The S&P 500 from Vanguard is 13% of the total. Hartford Core is another 5%. Parnassus Core is 1.6. Put it all together, you get 20.4%. If a fund is on a red flag list, we show you in very different points that red flag so you can think about it. So remember when we get there, there's 1% of the overall plan in that JP Morgan fund. All the other funds are on a good status, good standing. If we go to the left bottom, now we start to see a mixture. There's specialty funds in your plan. So these are vertically integrated funds. They are not diversified into multiple categories, but only in one industry. So we have precious metals on the bottom left and real estate. On the bottom right, natural resources and technology. And then above that, you look at your overseas investments. On the right is global large cap stock growth. That's American Funds New Perspective. So that's going to be US and overseas. To the left of that is emerging markets. To the left of that is going to be foreign markets. So no US holdings at all, but they are going to be more developed markets. So you're looking at Japan, you're looking at Australia, you're looking at Europe. We do also use target date funds in your plan. We mentioned that as an option. So you could put your money in a target date fund. You could put your money in your own list of funds. So we have the American Funds target dates are six. So that's our lowest cost share class. There's a 2060 for younger employees just starting. There's a 2010 for folks that have maybe been retired 15 years or so already. So what you need to know when you own these is just what year you plan to retire. And if you correspond with one of those years, that's great. If you don't, you can kind of make your own version of it. So if you're going to retire in the 2055, then you could buy part of it in the 2060, part of it in the 2050, and you've made yourself a 2055 fund. If you don't do anything, it's going to go into the one that's closest to your age as a default investment.
It's the reason why that's kind of slow or lower on this group, just doesn't return as much, or there's not.
So these are interest. Where this is just a representation of how much money's in there. These are not return numbers. These are just, there's only 6% of the overall plan there. Most people tend to prefer in the money purchase plan to pick their own investments. So these target dates came, well, we do these about 8 or 9 years ago, something like that. So newer hires are more likely to be in target date funds, but more established employees typically pick their own or have me help them pick their own. So there is a traditional balance fund in there too, which is about 2%. That's American balance. That's typically going to be 2/3 stocks, 1/3 bonds, and that's been our top performer over time. So if we change pages here to this one, then you look at what is in guaranteed. So Prudential Guaranteed Income was our only option. Now have the Vanguard Federal Money Market Fund, which is all in treasury bills. Retirement plans are, if you own a money market fund, it has to be all in treasury bills. It cannot be in commercial paper as it was in the past. There was two money market funds in the year 2000, which actually broke the buck, which means they took a loss on some of their commercial paper. Pacific Gas and Electric paper is one of those commercial papers that caused some issues. So the federal money market fund is all in treasury bills, which are guaranteed by the U.S. Treasury, but Vanguard does not guarantee the U.S. Treasury. So in every letter that Fidelity sends out, they try to say, there's no guarantee on this fund. Well, the holdings are guaranteed. The Vanguard's not guaranteeing that the federal government fails, that they'll come up and make up the difference. If that happens, we've got bigger problems. So but the nice thing about that is the yield is 5.29% currently for no risk. Prudential's guaranteed income fund is only paying 1.5%, which is why money is continually moving out of that for greener pastures. To the right of that is traditional bonds. So we have the Fidelity U.S. Bond Index. So that's intermediate term, 2 to 5 years, high grade in terms of credit quality. The Fidelity U.S. Bond Index is a low-cost way to track the bond market. That Goldman Sachs fund is red flagged. It's on your list today because there's still money in it, but the committee's already agreed in December to close that fund and to move the money into the fund right below, which is the American Funds Bond Fund of America. Questions for me?
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
So in that fund, the one you mentioned that's a 5%, what's the minimum holding period? Did you have to leave your money in there 30 days? Or?
Well, if you're trading in and out of it on a regular basis, eventually you'll set off some alarms, but by nature of the fund itself, they're treasury bills, you can buy and sell them each day. So if there's a certain number of trades, then eventually Fidelity is going to flag it and say, there's 11 trades in December, we're going to ask that employee to maybe slow down a little bit. So, but if you put it in there and you change your mind 2 weeks later, there's no problem.
Okay. Thank you.
If you wanted to move your money out of any investment right now into a safe fund, you don't have the option to buy Prudential Guaranteed Income Fund anymore. It's no longer an option. Payroll contributions don't go into it. So it's just a fund that's on payout. We've literally annuitized it. So it's not accepting new contributions. So if you took your money out of the stock market and wanted it to be guaranteed, you'd go to the Vanguard fund. Okay, if we look at the funds in order of risk, so 1 through, we've got 30, so or 100 choices. Yep. And then left to right is the Morningstar style, the name of the fund, the symbol, the assets as of the first part of the year. So you can look at the dollar amounts, those percentages to the right of that, the same percentages we just looked at in the style boxes. So again, those aren't performance numbers, but it's how the money's allocated. And then to the right of that is the number of participants or hashtag EE employees that are in each fund. And then to the right of that is going to be the expense ratio and the category average. We're going to list this next time a little bit differently. We'll show you the expense ratio, we'll show you the refund, and we'll show you the net expense ratio and the category average. So again, reminding you here what your red flagged fund is. So there's 1% of the plan or 1.8 million in that particular fund. In green, we show you the five biggest holdings. Number 4 is the TIOA price, all cap opportunities. It's biggest in terms of dollars, not in terms of headcount. Number 1 is still the Prudential Guaranteed Income Fund. Number 2 is the Vanguard 500 Index. Number 3 is the Hartford Core. Number 5 is the Fidelity U.S. Bond Index. And then Ami is highlighted, my team is highlighted, is on close. So that 400 grand will move to the fund right here. But now we're up to 173 million from 2 months ago, 1,074 in loans. Total balances are 370.
It's number 1, number 37, Safe Harbor. That's getting moved out at some point.
Yeah, so you can move money out of that at any time, but on November 1st, half of it will be moved to the Vanguard money market, and then November 1st of 25, the other half. So never to be seen again. Okay, so last May, we looked at every mutual fund in both plans to consider which share classes we were going to use moving forward with Fidelity. But what we did look at is when we already owned the lowest share class possible, should we go backwards in terms of moving in a than what we have. Oh, I have a lot of my money. But net of the refund is cheaper. So I love having on the front door low-cost funds, but should we revisit the funds listed here for another share class? So this is called inefficiency. And, you know, anytime I meet with mutual fund wholesalers, I'm saying, got to get your numbers right. I don't think this is an accident. They know we're all moving to zero revenue sharing eventually, so they're kind of giving us a disincentive to do that, or at least they're going to make more if you're going to do that. Are in the blue stripe. The fund you could move to is in the white stripe. So there's some candidates in the 457 plan. There's just two candidates in the 401A. So what are we talking about here? We own the principal real estate securities R6, which is their cheapest version. R6 typically is everyone's cheapest version. Not everyone uses that nomenclature, but if you do, it's typically your cheapest. It charges 80 basis points. It has no revenue sharing. So the net cost to your participants is 80. But if you went to the institutional class, then you're going to have a little bit higher expense ratio, 86, but they're going to give 10 of that back to your employees. So your net cost is 76. So I think we have, if we have a fee policy statement for this committee, it's we go with the most fee efficient. So do we need to make a series of changes here? I'll turn to Jason and Kevin, who were very involved in the process before, to realize that, or do we stick with the lower sticker price that is on the ones that we own?
I see no reason for us to be paying more, have our employees pay more, so I'm in favor of moving over to the net cheapest option. It's been consistent with other actions we've taken here as well.
I would agree. Any of these too close to worry about? It seems like all of them are at least 4 or 5 basis points, if not 10.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Funds equally as good.
It's the same fund, same manager, same approach. It's just what they charge you. It's the same meal. They pay $100 instead of $80, but they'll give you $40 back. So for the same stay.
Stephanie, would you want a formal committee action? To...
Yep.
Yes. I'll make a motion that we move the funds listed in the staff report here to the more efficient share classes.
Second, if you have to do a roll call.
Roll call vote.
Yeah. Did someone second it? Sorry.
Yep, I did.
Roll call. Director Mesqua?
Yes.
Director Wigand?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Casey Vatigas?
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Take a little education too. So cover all that as well.
More meetings.
We'll allude to that at tomorrow's webinar as well. Right, thank you, everybody. So first today is items review. 5 or 6 years ago, we changed the format of this meeting to cover two different ways, the 401A funds. The items for review are items that we're bringing to your attention that think they need at least review, if not action. And there's items for consent that anybody can later pull as something that I want to look into more deeply. But either way, there's due diligence for your records provided to show the homework on all of these particular funds. So we're looking at funds that are either red flagged or one that our team has looked at and said we need to take a closer look at because it's not performing up to the goals that we have. Most of you are familiar with the format that we use, but let me explain it for any particular newcomers. So this is a software program called Zephyr Style Advisor. It uses Morningstar data. You heard my Morningstar allusions earlier, so they're kind of the way that a lot of mutual funds are organized. But we have two charts. The top and middle part of each page here is going to be what's called a risk-reward scatter diagram. We're looking at net rates of return. That's a little tricky when it comes to revenue sharing, which we'll talk about in just a second. The net rate of return is on the up and down axis. And then left to right, we're looking at the standard deviation, which is a measurement of how volatile the holdings are. Volatility can be a positive, but mostly it's a negative. But how much does the price of everything vary? Typically means if you're taking more risk, you can have better gains and bigger losses. If you're taking less risk, hopefully you can make the same returns. The question is what's appropriate for everybody. Now, these are not put on here to be investments that in your plan. One coincidentally happens to be, which is the TO price all cap opportunities. But we're using this as a reference, and this is frozen in time from the end of last year. So the top chart is 3 years. The middle chart is the last 5 years. The benchmark, which is going to change on every category we go through, is the Russell 1000 growth, which has kind of been everybody's been talking about recently because those seven stocks driving all the returns, they're all headquartered in this particular category. So you're looking at 3 years at the top, 5 years in the middle. So if you have a fund that's further to the right, it's taking more risk. Further to the left, it's taking less risk. Where we don't want to be is in the bottom right corner. That's where this Aldra Spectra fund is, which is the blue square. It's underperforming the market and taking more risk. That's where I think we'd have liability if we were offering that to employees and didn't pull it out for a better option. What you'd like to see is a fund that's perhaps like T. Rowe on the 5 year, where it's giving you benchmark performance for less risk. Perhaps even the AB large cap growth would be considered on the 5 year chart because it's less risky than the benchmark. Its performance is a bit less. It's also below that diagonal red line, which is called the capital markets line, which is a way of going from the risk-free rate of return, which is that empty triangle or empty diamond on the bottom left, which is if you had your money in treasury bills over that period of time, all the way up to the benchmark itself. So it kind of gives you a risk return. Now on the 5 year chart, you can see JP Morgan is beating the benchmark for about the same amount of risk. That'd probably be the one that you would pick, or if you wanted one that's a little less risky, you'd probably consider the T. Rowe. You certainly wouldn't consider the Alger, or I wouldn't let you consider the Alger. Now, if you notice the last 3 years, it's been a tougher road to hoe, as you see that even the best funds are struggling a little bit against the benchmark. Most mutual funds have a limit on how much of one stock they can own. Sometimes it's 5%, sometimes 7, sometimes 8, sometimes 10. But if you didn't have your entire fund in those seven stocks, you'd probably underperform. Now look at our performance information calendar year by calendar year, and please, it goes backwards, so we have to read right to left here. 2019 is the most distant period. 2023 is the most recent period. So you can see that we had one big down year, which is 2022, and then one big recovery year, which is 2023. Now, if you go down 40% in 2023, as Aldra Spector did, and you go 40% in 2023, it's like 22 and 23, it's funny, you're not break even. You still got a ways to go to get to even, but you get an idea here how volatile this category's been. But again, the recovery has been largely on the backs of seven very large stocks. So you see this kind of symbol with all the different large growth funds that are struggling. The index funds are doing the best. We'll see if that changes in the future as some of these stocks start to struggle. We've already seen Tesla start to fall apart this year. Apple's kind of taken a vacation from making money. So we'll see if that is the case longer term. But a lot of money going into Microsoft and NVIDIA. Bottom right, I have alluded to, that's the manager's style. So the benchmark is always going to be this black diamond. In this case, it's in that little square right under Russell 1000 growth, which is the same thing as the benchmark. The funds are slightly different in terms of holdings, which means they're not index funds. But you can see these two funds here in purple and in blue are a little bit below, which means they own a little bit smaller companies than the benchmark. On average, a little bit to the left is AB telling you there's a little bit of value in there. They're not going to be pure growth. They have a touch of value in there, but still a growth fund. And then T. Rowe Price is doing a little bit of both, a little bit smaller companies, a little bit more value oriented. That's why they renamed themselves All Cap Opportunities. That used to be called the New American Fund, if anybody remembers that. So questions about this page before I go to the second one? So if we have funds to consider adding, we typically throw in this tiebreaker page, which gets you look at a couple different data points about the fund. The top one's called the upside cap, downside capture. So in good times and bad times, what did your fund do? The benchmark here is always going to be at 100. That's different from where it was here with the absolute rate of return. Here, it's just going to be a reference point to the benchmark. So the benchmark is going to be at 100 on both of these scales. This scale is how much of the upside did they give you? So if the market was going up, did they give you more or less of the same gains as the market? And on the downside is when the market's going down, it'll give you more or less. So you look at our Aldra Spector here, it's over in the bottom right corner again. When the market's going down, it's giving you about 104% of the losses if I took my line down to this scale here. So if the market went down 10, they went down 10.4. But when the market goes up 10%, they're only going up 8.5. You can see their upside capture is only 85%. So that's a fund you're probably better off retiring or doing something different. Now, T. Rowe Price, you can see it's giving about 97% of the upside, but maybe only 92% of the downside. I'm sorry, that's JP Morgan, apologies. So T. Rowe over here is the most conservative of the batch, 85% of the upside, 85% of the downside. So when the market was doing poorly a few years ago, you can see T. Rowe was the best. When the market did well, T. Rowe was the worst. And it still had a nice gain, but not as big as the benchmark. So that's kind of referenced here over a five-year period on this particular chart. And then AB gives you about 87 of the up and maybe 94 of the down. So you'd probably be better off with JP Morgan and T. Rowe on those on these choices. If we don't want the Alger. And then the bottom left is your floating bars. So 1 year through 5 years, this is every fund in the benchmark of large growth. So every particular fund that you could consider would be here. These floating bars vary. The shorter term is always going to be wider because the disparity of returns will vary over the shorter period of time. It'll average out over the longer period of time. So you can see over the longer term, 4 and 5 years, JP Morgan's probably been the best. Hugo right behind it. Alger's kind of been in that fourth quintile, which is represented by the red. But ironically, guess who was number one in 2023? It was Aldrin. So as a committee, our style has normally been to pick the most consistent, and that's probably one of the reasons that T-Row happens to be in your plan. Questions? A lot to absorb there. All right, so the first item we wanted to bring to your attention is in the money purchase plan, which is the foreign large growth category. So overseas companies, at least 7 billion or in size, and that are in the growth feature. We have two funds here, Vanguard International Growth and MFS International Intrinsic Value. It's got value in its name, but guess what? It's a growth fund. So if you look at the bottom right, you look at the style, both of these fall on the MSCI, EAFE, Europe, Africa, and the Far East growth side. Vanguard tends to be a little bit smaller in their holdings, kind of halfway between large and mid in terms of size. So they'll pick up more $20, $30 billion companies, whereas you'll see MFS has been much bigger in terms of holdings. Now, over the last 5 years, both have been outstanding. They beat their benchmark, MFS with less risk, Vanguard with more. But it's the 3 years we're pointing out to you. MFS is still fantastic, so no recommendations or issues there. But we're trying to point out that Vanguard has struggled of late. Now, this is a Vanguard actively managed fund. Many people don't realize that Vanguard has no portfolio managers. They outsource this. So there's two growth managers that manage this portion of it. And you can see they had an incredible 2020. That's this blue line here. But the blue bar has had a bit of a struggle each of the years since then. Problem sometimes with a manager like this is it sucks people into pour tons of money in it to try to be part of the 60% gain, sometimes after the gain occurred, and then it hasn't done as well since. So we wanted to bring that to committee's attention. There's about 2% in Vanguard, 2.6% in MFS, 92 people in Vanguard, 161 MFS. If we go to Morningstar's rankings, Vanguard is 3 stars out of 5, and then they have a qualitative rating, which they call the medalist rating. So it's like Olympic medals, gold is the best, then silver, then bronze. 4th would be called neutral, 5th would be called negative. They give the process and the team that runs this fund a silver rating, so 3 stars in silver. MFS International is 5 stars in silver. So that's a higher ranked fund, and MFS is definitely in the top third on 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, and 10 year. Vanguard is top third on 5 and 10 year, but it's bottom 10% on 1 and 3 years. So with a manager like this that's got a good history, often we want to give them more time, which is where you could red flag them, but would be my recommendation to at least flag them today. I'm going to change slides and just show you a 6-month period and a 12-month period. And you can see recent performance has been the same as the 3-year performance. So we can consider new options right here on the spot, which would be this next slide. All these funds with the green marks would give you the opportunity to do that. We have marked this MFS International Growth Fund in orange because it's already in your other plans, already in your 457 plan. So sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes you want to offer a variety. So my recommendation would be to red flag, but if people want to dig into these alternatives, I'm happy to do so.
I support the recommendation red flag. Kind of as you're noting, Scott, it does look that once a really good 2020 drops off, it's going to be challenging.
It's going to be rough
for this one to get off the red flag.
Yes, sir.
I think it's, but I still think we want to go through the process and give it the quarter or two.
Yeah, I think we got to stick with the discipline, but boy, you hope they had a big 2023 that they did. So
if we were to red flag this, we would see this again in April.
Yeah.
But because of how our schedule played out, this is even shorter than usual.
Okay. Yeah, only 2 months away. You can see that month of January is on there. It's down slightly. Everyone else is about flat. So January wasn't giving us much hope yet either. It's only 1 month.
If we can reach kind of consensus verbally here, we usually have the board secretary to kind of take each of these down and just do a final motion for all the options at once. So we have to vote. Okay. So,
and then when you come back in April, if everyone agrees to get rid of it, you'll have options.
Yeah, so we'll probably have the similar list to this list right here that you could add. So there's 3 Fidelity options, American Funds, Bank of New York, Mellon, Calvert, MFS that we can choose from. And this is comparing all the funds versus the entire universe, but you can see Vanguard is 4th quintile here, quartile, excuse me. So it's been a difficult fund since its big run. Sometimes the fact that it had such good performance in 2020 is part of the problem because it attracts an enormous amount of money to the fund. They've got to invest it somewhere. They'll buy more of their names. Their names maybe go up too much in value, and then they struggle. So the nature of chasing performance, which is ongoing again as we speak. So we okay with red flagging? Wait, disagree?
Yeah, I think we red flag in seems in 2 months.
Okay.
It's a lot of merit.
It's been in the plan for 15 years.
Okay.
Yep. Vanguard does outsource the manager of that fund. They did change one of the managers, and they changed the ratio by which they manage. It was 2/3, 1/3. That's more like 60-40, not a major change, but they haven't seen the results yet. So. Okay, so next item for attention is in the mid-growth category. We have two choices here. We're very happy with Janice Henderson Enterprise. That's the blue square. It's in orange because it's in both plans. But you can see it is clobbering the benchmark. It's outperforming with less risk. Now, this is a mid-cap growth fund, but this is where it's more art than science. It is Morningstar says it's a mid-growth fund. It ranks as a mid-growth fund, but a lot of their holdings are mid-blend. But then actually look at the mid-cap blend. Our growth benchmark is also very mid-blending, so it doesn't make any sense. But the idea here is that that has been a remarkable fund. Now, it prevented losses in 2022, which is one of the reasons it looks so good. It did have solid gains in 23, but it's not a fund that's going to perform drastically on the upside, drastically on the downside. It tends to be consistent, which is why it's been so good. That does have a high rating. It is a 5-star rated fund. We're here to talk about JP Morgan mid-cap growth, which is down here. Unfortunately, almost every mid-cap growth fund that's a pure mid-cap growth fund has been struggling. Janice is getting away with it because they have not owned the traditional holdings of mid-growth. They've picked around it. But it is still a manager that's been there more than 12 years. It's 4 stars in bronze, so it has a high ranking. And it is highly ranked versus its peers. Tough to see those. It's trying to make those numbers a little bigger for everybody. So it's 25th percentile over the last year, one being best, 100 being worst. It's 47th on 3 year. It's 9th on 5 year. It's 9th on 10 years. So manager's been there for almost 20 years. That's been a good track record. But all the mid-growth funds are kind of struggling. Now, if we look at 6- and 12-month performance, there is good news, ladies and gentlemen. JP Morgan had a great 2023. So it is showing signs of improvement. So our investment policy statement says over those 2 to 4 quarters that it's red flagged, it needs to show signs of improvement. It has shown signs of improvement. So that's what we like to see. That's what we didn't see in Vanguard, which was the comeback year, which we did see here in JP Morgan, which was a nice comeback year. So bigger loss in 22, bigger gain in 2020 and 23. So if you want to look at alternatives, we can certainly do that, which is on page 52, but it's sort of interesting. If you look at all the ones that are more on the right side of the style that are true growth funds, they're all the ones that are below the benchmark on the 3 year. If you look at the two funds that say we're growth, but really are mid-blend funds, it's this one and the Virtus, those are your best performance. So it was best not to be in the category you were hired to be in. I wouldn't think we'd want two funds that did that because when growth goes back into style for mid-caps, you want a fund that's going to be there to capture that. And in 2023, JP Morgan did that. So it's red flagged. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if we take it off red flag based on the 3 year still being down here, but I wouldn't replace it.
If we were to maintain red flag, our policy would indicate that in the next meeting in April, we'd need to make a decision, correct?
Unless we could document an exception to that, which could be remarkable late performance or something like that.
Yeah, I would agree with your recommendation that we maintain the red flag and then revisit it the next meeting and see if they continue to show the improvements that they've shown recently.
Yeah, so if you drop... They didn't have a great 2021, but so you are dropping off some 2021 performance, which will help. So if they're just neutral, their number will look better on the 3 years the next time we see you. But that's only 2 months from now. So we're thinking stay red flag here.
I think without question.
That's fine. There's only how many percentage of employee segments?
It's 1% of the overall plan, 47 different people. Morningstar reports for all these funds. This is JP Morgan's ranking 5 stars in bronze. If you're curious what the holdings are, they're listed here. CrowdStrike, which has been a huge winner. Things like Ross Stores, Copart, Dexcom, et cetera. All right. Get some DoorDash.
I saw that.
Help yourself. That's what this DoorDash is. All right. So another one in the money purchase plan. So we have two choices here in Midland. One is the principal mid-cap S&P 400 index. And the committee has heard this before, but I'll reference it again. There's two mid-cap benchmarks that are prevalent. One is the S&P 400 index. One is the Russell mid-cap. To be in the S&P, you have to be a profitable company, which you think would be, why would you buy a stock that's not profitable? Well, that's the markets we've been in of late, is companies with incredible potential but no profits have been very popular for people. Certainly during COVID, we saw that in 21. We're starting to see that again. So if you look at the benchmark here, of late, Principal has been better following the S&P 400 benchmark, which is this yellow diamond. So it's been better than the Russell Midcap, but there are periods of time where some of the Russell is better, that we're more attracted to speculation and higher risk companies that have potential for growth. So you'll see the black benchmark do better. So you had a bigger loss in the Russell than the S&P in 23, that's 22, and then a bigger gain in 23. So we're happy with that one, no issue there. But we did want to point out that Kirlin Scout is definitely a fund that's struggling. It's underperforming the benchmark, and it's more benchmarked, I think, in terms of its holding to the Russell. But if we look at individual years here, it's been a while since 2020 when they had a big outperformance year. So it's struggled a little bit more of late. Now, not on red flags, so we can land on that today if you'd like to do that. Morningstar gives them a 3-star ranking and bronze for their process. Let me show you just recent performance. So both of them are below the benchmark because, again, Russell came back into style. But Principal sticking with their knitting following the S&P 400 benchmark. Kirill and Scout, a little bit more off the reservation. Now, if we want to replace it, we do have alternatives to consider here today. Again, our tradition has normally been to allow that fund to go on flag. But there is a fund that my team has used for our high net worth clients, but not our retirement plans, that Fidelity finally added to their list, which is this Madison Midcap. So that was one to definitely keep an eye on. We've really thought highly of that fund, but it is now available on the platform. We wouldn't have had an option to use that back at Empower, but that's a 5-star and bronze rated fund, but it's been doing really well. So something that we could consider as an alternative to Scout. Do you like red flag or do we want to go shopping?
Minimum red flags deserving. Real quick question on this Madison fund that you brought up, Scott. We've got kind of two different benchmarks here. What does that track closest to?
Yeah, so you can, this is, you'd want them to kind of be around the crosshairs here of this. So maybe that touchstone the closest in terms of that. BNY Mellon's a little bit more of a value fund. So Madison's telling you that they are a little bit bigger in terms of the average holdings than their peers or the benchmark. Bigger has been beautiful of late. We'll see if that changes. Markets tend to cycle. But that certainly benefited them of late.
And Madison's a 5-star.
It is. Yeah, it was a 5-star. So if we look at the approach here. Some of the other funds I haven't named are also some, certainly some solid ones to consider, but Kirill and Scout, 3 stars in bronze. They're at middle of the pack of the last 12 months, their bottom. 15% on the 3-year, their bottom 25% on the 5-year, but they've still got a good 10-year.
How holding is this Palantir? Didn't that take a big tank?
Palantir is one of those artificial intelligence stocks that flies around on a daily basis. So like if you checked it before lunch and after lunch, it's going to be a different stock.
Versus Madison, it seems like they've got some other. They're holding from a little different. They got a lot of 6%.
You had some luck with that.
I bought it $8. It's Sean DeWayne's recommendation. It's a 25.
So now your dog's named Palantir?
Yeah. I think they're involved in AI, but I'm not really sure.
They are. So they were one of those stocks that got pummeled in 22 and was like doubled since then or something. Triple. I believe. They know something.
No, our standard process would be to reply.
Yeah, we could technically add Madison, but I would just stick to the discipline. So we don't want to have, we don't want to panic buy the new Porsche on the, while we're standing there. All right.
We'll start with
one. And then you'll just keep an eye on Madison for that
time. Yeah. So it'll be on the list when we come back in 2 months. Okay, so that is items for review and the money purchase. Do you want to cover the 457 item for review before we vote?
Yeah,
we can
go.
Yeah, just do a bubble.
Yes, good.
Thank you. So our headline here, items for review and the 457 plan. Again, not a 457 plan review, but wanted to show you items for review. So more colors today. This is the gray flag, which is an off the minutes. Note that this fund has struggled to touch, and we wanted to look at it again every quarter until we feel like we need to take action or we feel like we can take it off the watch list. So this was actually just a couple months ago in December. We made note of it. And I think we were making note because in 2022, our fund in blue underperformed the benchmark. 23, which is a recovery year for gold stocks, it was up, but not as much. So far in the first month of 2024, gold stocks have definitely struggled. They kind of had a nice December rally and then had a struggle in January. So the fund's done a little bit better there. It did have a good 2021. It had a wonderful 2020. But it puts it pretty close to the benchmark here. It is still above the benchmark over 5 years. But once it loses 2020, which we're still 2 years from that, but it is going to not look quite as good as it does right now. This is a 3-star rated fund. Its performance is very much slightly below average in terms of funds. The problem is there's just not that many gold funds. Everyone wants to start a technology fund. No one wants to start a precious metals fund. So if we look at alternatives, it's all names that we know and love that we've either had before or considered before. Now I'm showing you a 6 and 12 month chart. So Franklin does look good on the 6 month chart. It does look fine on a 12 month chart. So last year has been okay. So I don't think it needs to be red flagged, but I could certainly see how some people would. And that would be because of this slight underperformance here. Now, if we want to consider alternatives, here is the list. 3 alternatives, one of which we're already using. First, Eagle Gold has the best ranking, but because it owns the most gold bullion, it doesn't own stocks as much as it owns gold and silver. But ironically, it is the one that tends to be the most defensive. Upside downside capture, always great for this. You can see it doesn't capture as much downside, but it also doesn't capture as much upside. So if gold gets hot again, off goes the other funds. First Eagle may be left behind.
Gold's always a defensive play, right? Like
usually, yeah, but it seems like gold is more based on what we expect the Fed to do these days. So if we feel like they're going to be more dovish and throw more money at the problem, then gold tends to go up. If it looks the other way, it tends to go down. So it seems like energy has become a little bit more defensive than gold. So we get nervous, we buy oil. This is more companies that mine the gold and sell it.
All right. Buy your wife something.
Yeah. thinking, committee? We want a flag. We want to up new flags. We want to keep it as is.
I'm going to let them lead.
Yeah. I'd say recent performance would indicate red flag if not necessary. It's above benchmark 6 month and 1 year. I think what I've seen and heard so far with gold is it's kind of everything's in the same quadrant except for this, what's the first eagle?
Yes, sir.
Which is, I guess, at some level more conservative, and then when gold's been down for a while, it's the smallest loser during some of the previous years.
Right.
It may not, who knows what the future holds, but I don't see a reason for us to make an immediate move at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I would just keep an eye on it, at least we normally do.
Okay.
Yeah, special.
So it would be part of the next meeting by just nature of being the fourth.
Yeah,
I guess
that's
okay. So no action there. Everybody, one more thing, and then we can vote. Any items for consent? Anybody have any issues? All of these are looking good. So this is the Compass report, or the target date analysis of the target date funds we used in your particular plan. So we had the American Funds Target Date Retirement Funds. They've been around since 2007. American Funds is one of the three biggest mutual fund companies in the United States. They are active management only. They are team management only. So every fund is divided up into different parts. 6, 7, 8, sometimes 10 portions are each individually managed by a separate manager and his or her team. And then they come back and create a portfolio out of that. But the target date funds are fund of funds. So they use more than 20 American funds to create a portfolio that then are utilized as a complete investment for some of your participants. So the asset class summary, this shows all the different categories. Remember my Morningstar style boxes. Now we're looking at this a different way. So they have everything except for real estate investment trust. They don't have a REIT fund or real estate investment trust fund, but they do cover every other category now. So there's 11 different asset classes represented. This is the glide path, which is the pace at which they reduce your equity exposure. Across the bottom are how many years before we retire, your target retirement date, which will be the name of the fund, and then how many years after you retire. So the pace at which you reduce your equity exposure, so you're brand new to the workforce, you're 22, you've got your first job, you're going to be at 90% stocks and stay there until you're about 20 years away from retirement. About 20 years from retirement, they start reducing your equity exposure. Gets a little faster once you're at 15 years, then they get you down to close to half your money is in stocks, half your money is in bonds, cash at retirement. They slowly continue that journey 25 years into retirement, and they flatten that out at that point. So that is the blue line is the ones that we own. The purple line is the most aggressive in the industry, so we're not far from that. And then the most conservative is here. So they have brand new to the workforce people, a little less than 60% of their money in stocks and 25% of stocks when they retire. So some data, $272 billion in the funds have been around since February of 07. 46% is the exact number at retirement, 28% once you reach age 95. They are not tactical, which means they don't make bets. They're going to build a portfolio. They don't care about what markets are doing. They're not going to say, we like international, we like value. They're just going to keep the portfolio, rebalance it every quarter. When stocks are down, they're buying them. When stocks are up, they're selling them. And true for all the different categories. So there are 28 funds which make up each portfolio. The average manager tenure is 19. It's pretty much unheard of on Wall Street. And then the longest manager tenure is 32 years, which concerns me since I've been doing this 30 years. How'd that happen? All right, so across the top here, this is performance for all the funds. There's a suite of funds, so there's a long list of them. Year-to-date is basically your 2023 numbers. It's identical to the 1 year. Then a 3-year average, a 5-year average, a 10-year average, and a 15-year average. The rate of return of our fund is the number listed right here. The benchmark performance is in bold here, which is the benchmark is the S&P target date 2010 as a reference point. Then there is in italics how many funds you're competing with. So there's 116 competitors here. 15 years ago, there was only 33 competitors. Then there's a percentage rank in the category. One is best, 100 is worse. And you want your number, so you want your number to be as low as possible. And now they're color-coded. Green is good, red is bad, to give you an idea. So we start with the 2010, then the 2015, the 2020. Remember, we only have them on the deciles. So we have 10, 20, 30, 40, et cetera. But you get an idea. So 2023 was not a great year for these funds. But if you look at their long-term performance, they are the top performing funds over the last 3 years. They're in the top 10 for 5 years. They're number one on several of these for 10 years. And they're very strong over the last 15 years. So they didn't capture quite all the money that was being made just in those top seven stocks last year. They're also not a fund target date suite that buys a lot of high yield or junk quality debt, which really did well last year. They tend to be more investment grade. So that helped them in 22, it hurt them in 23. So this takes us through the 2030 fund. That'd be for someone retiring in 6 years or so. Then I switch pages here. So we have the 2035 at the top. So stock performance was definitely better over the 1 year. And they still have the great 3, 5, 10, and 15. So better at equities than they are at bonds, and at least in this environment. And then you see the longer term ones, top 10% last year on the 2060, which is our most distant one in terms of young employees. So let me show you then long-term performance. Let's switch this over here. So growth of $10,000 of a 2030 fund. If you started with 10 grand when these funds were born in 2007, you now have $30,483, so three times your money. If you were in the target benchmark, you would have $25,000. These have averaged 681 a year, the benchmark 573, and you can see the blue line is separated since 2013, where stock picking has definitely made a difference. So this is the 2030, this is the 2040, this is the 2050. And then if you look at performance versus their peers, this is a three-year rolling average for the 2030. Here is, there's two different charts. Go back to 2012. Here, if you're above this 0.0 line or this gray line, it means you're outperforming your benchmark. So really from 2012 to 2022, they did underperform last year. But if you look at it on a three-year rolling basis, they've been top quartile since 2013. They've ventured down to second quartile a few times, but really been that entire time a three-year rolling average. So ups and downs over a three-year period. They've been one of the best. This is the 2030, 2040, 2050. So you have a bigger drop off in the 2050. And then if you go a little further out in time, so we smooth out the performance for a five-year period, so a full market cycle almost, you can see they're almost locked in to the top quartile. 2040 has been the best for all but a few minutes. 2050, same story. I think we're in good hands here. Any comments or questions?
Sorry, would you say that if you were to solicit more employees' interest in these types of funds, they would do better than being in the other funds? Or would you just say it's just an easy way to not set it and forget it and not have to deal with thinking of this? Like, isn't that, that's kind of what you want, right? You want people not to be engaging too often because that's when you risk your retirement. The whole purpose of these accounts are to protect you for your future.
Right.
So is there a reason why there's not that many employees in these funds compared to more in the other ones? Or is it just, to each his own, it's a strategy that you help guide them through?
I think a little bit of it is inertia because folks that have been with the district for a while that have already picked out their funds have been happy with them, so they haven't thought to change. I think if you looked at new hires the last 5 years, you'd see a much higher participation rate in these. And then so it is nice to say, let's just spend time figuring out how much money you need to save each year and not worry about the investments. And over time, we'll educate you so you understand how to make your own choices. But we don't see too many people that just sort of scrap their approach and move over here.
Yeah.
We do see people kind of add them in there, but usually if you've taken the time or interest level to build something, people tend to make adjustments, but not reset it. I think for newer hires, you'll see them go into target date funds and may over time venture out, but use those target date funds as a more of a base. And if in doubt, go back to the base, because you take the emotions out of it. Like you say, when stocks are doing terribly, we want to liquidate, they're buying. When stocks are doing great, we want to take all our money and put it into stocks, they're selling. So it does take the emotions out of that. That's kind of why they're invented. A, so you don't have to spend time on it, and B, so you're less likely to make an emotional decision. So they function, they work well. But I think, you know, with us having a presence here, a lot more of your employees here like the aspect of controlling what they pick and having things that they enjoy or understand rather than just going with the black box. Works great if that's what we want to do, though.
I think because there's this involvement of a committee like this, right, you being here, having all these other options, it's good. If you're in a big company or right, a big government agency where you're not getting this right, hands-on approach, then these probably are your better.
Scott is the best.
Oh, well, that's
a pretty good psychologist based on that one.
Nice to hear. But that's absolutely true. So our biggest client has 7,000 participants now, and 72% of their money are in the target date fund. Because while we do regular webinars and meetings and enrollment, you're just not going to get to 7,000 people across the country. So the automatic enrollment, which is how they work, and then automatically into a target date, set it, forget it, you get your match, you move on. That's great. People that didn't have to spend much time thinking about it, they wake up one day, they've got their retirement set. So that's kind of the idea.
Yeah, this is where all my money's at.
Right.
Where all my jobs.
And it works. It works great.
Yeah, sure.
But I think if you had 2,000 employees, it'd be a different story.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Right. Got it. Yep. And that concludes my presentation. So I think we have a vote.
Yeah.
Back.
Want to be back for
For the 401A items to review, we are going to red flag the Vanguard International Growth. We're going to maintain the red flag on the JP Morgan Mid Cap, and then also red cap the Carleon Scout Mid Cap. And for the 457 review, there was no action on the Franklin Gold and Precious Metals.
The share class changes included in the packet.
That's not accurate, Scott.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll move the changes.
I'll second that.
Roll call for the vote. All right. Roll call, Director Wigand.
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Jason Dadakis?
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Chair direction, I'm going to ask you guys if you're okay with that being on the consent calendar for...
Yeah, discuss it.
On the consent calendar. Any announcements or reports? Seeing none, we're adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Great question.